What's up, everyone? This is Jay, aka Brother So, welcoming you to the Hollyoaks podcast, today covering Hollyoaks episodes that aired between February the 21st and April the 27th. I am here with my homegirl, the Wendy to my Silas, Miss Lindsay Amanda. How you doing, best auntie in the universe?
Ew. I like her and I hate her at the same time. Because I like what she's doing, but I hate how she's doing it.
Yeah. So,
but we'll get there later.
Yes. She is a hot mess, but she stirred up the pot. And I love it. And I love that she's doing it with her little American accent, which sounds weird as hell.
Especially since she's an American actress.
Yes. And I think I told you offline, this is the same issue that I had both with Doug and with his mom, both of whom I assumed were British people faking American voices. I think because we're so used to watching UK shows where everyone speaks with that twang in their voice, it is so odd to hear Americans. Like, Americans sound so foreign on these soaps, and it's just weird. It is so odd.
Yeah.
So odd. But we love Wendy. She can stay. Okay, Mama. So, this is another week when I did not do a question to start off. So, we are just going to get into this show.
Sounds good. I will start
by saying, if there are any questions that you all have about Hollyoaks, or there happens to be something that we did not talk about today that you would have liked us to talk about, although we're going to talk about a lot of stuff, so I don't see how that's going to be possible, but head over to britishsoappodcast.tumblr.com to shoot us an ask, or hit us up on the Twitterations at UK Soap Podcast. We had alcoholics, we had serial killers, we had abortion rights, we had May-December romance. So many things to talk about up on this here program. Miss Lynn, start us off. Tell us what aspect of Hollyoaks made you say, what in the hell?
You know, I loved Ella and Charlie's whole storyline, right? Or it was Ella, right? No.
Yep.
Yeah. It was Ella. But my thing with that I really what the hell most about that storyline was when Ella was threatening to get an abortion because she didn't think that Charlie was up for the task.
Yes.
And then she realized, hey, I can do this on my own with, you know, Steve's daughter's help there. And then she goes in the next day for the scan and she has a miscarriage. And then Charlie's like, it's her fault for losing the baby anyway. She didn't want it anyway. So you know, and I'm just like, it's not her fault for having a miscarriage. I can understand you're angry, but don't go blaming her for a natural thing. You know?
How?
And, like, destroying the... And I know he was devastated because, you know, he's a boy who was just like, dude, I'm 15, I'm having a baby, I want to, you know, do this and stuff like that. He was actually going to go through with it and everything. And then, you know, Cleo had to go and open her big fat mouth and say, oh, hey, you know. And then he got all mad and he wasn't there to help guide her through the miscarriage and stuff, and he got mad. And I was just like, that was totally the wrong way to go about it, but at the same time, it was chef's kiss at the same time. So I'm not really sure how to, you know, signify that, because it was really well done, but it was just really, really hard to watch him be angry over something that nature did. And not her, you know.
100%. How our shared what the hell is written down in my notes is insensitive Charlie flipping from prioritizing football to all of a sudden being this poor, plagued, grieving father. What? I mean, Ella reaches out to dude tells dude, hey, I got a scan this week. My man's like, pump your scan. I'm about to go play football. What? Like, on what planet does any dude, even a dude that's like 15 years old, like dudes have some more sense these days. Like, mm-hmm. if your girl is calling you talking about some, hey, I got a scan coming up, you ain't going to be like, well, I got to play soccer with my boys. Like, that's some ridiculousness, right? Mm-hmm. And I think seeing this side of Charlie is a what the hell, because we've seen this kid grow up the same way we saw Jacob on Emmerdale grow up. So once they start being teenagers and doing dumb boy-ish, like, it's annoying as hell to watch them do this foolishness. You know, so yeah, I hated it. Like, and the fact that he could not, you know, bring forth his sensitivity enough to console that young lady because he was concerned with his feelings and his man pain, I was just through it, dude. So yeah, I'm feeling you on that. Charlie was doing the most, and I think in the time period that we watch, I think post-crash is when this happened, him and Ella came to an understanding and there was calm made. But Jesus yes. Christ, I wanted somebody to throttle Charlie when he was doing all that foolishness, because he was just being a punk and it wasn't cute and I don't ever need to see it again. So totally agree with that. What the hell?
Yeah, it's like one of my other ones was from, you know, the 20th to the 27th week when, you know, Ella's, you know, trying to be friends with Mason and Mason likes Ella and Charlie keeps butting in on him because, you know, they were together and stuff. So it's just like, no, that's not how it works, Charlie. You broke up with her because she couldn't have your baby and you got mad at her and you broke it off like a little punk and ruined her little tree, and which was really cute, by the way. And now that she's trying to move on, yes, she's only 15 and stuff, but Mason's a cute little dude.
Mm-hmm, agreed.
A cute little magic dude. You have no right, child, to be walking up into their little happy space and trying to do stuff to break them up and make them unhappy. Yeah. No right whatsoever.
It's because he's jealous. Mason is clearly more mature than him. He has a talent and he is expressing genuine interest, and he is mature enough to, you know, be a man about the way that he feels and be genuine in his connection to Ella. And Charlie is jealous. And no, I'm sorry. A young lady does not have to stop living her life because you have decided that you are man and this is my territory. No, that's BS. I understand that the theme in this world right now is that men are superior to women and men get to tell women what the hell they do with their bodies. But you know what? That ain't gonna be the case when it comes to Ella and Mason. If those two want to do what they do, they're gonna be cute and fabulous together and they're gonna enjoy each other as they deserve to. Charlie shot his shot. He treated Ella disrespectfully. Girlfriend wants a man that's going to treat her right. I ain't mad at it. So I'm totally here for Mason and Ella. I totally agree. He is very cute. And he had a little bullying stuff that Charlie was trying to do. The lame bullying at that. Yeah, it was a mess. And I want him to decide. And I want to see Ella and Mason grow. Because I need happiness in both their lives. So
yeah, it's like I need happiness for Ella. Because Ella's a cute little thing who's been through too much in the past couple years. That maybe a little, you know, I mean, like, if something pops out that she was a part of, you know, county lines, that might be an issue. But, you know, you know, like, their reaction, and there's another one. One of my other big what the hells is everyone's reaction to how it came out that cute little, I can't think of his name right now. Lizzie's boyfriend.
First I was like, who's Lizzie? But she's in my head. Serena is the sister.
Serena's the other sister who also, like, I can't think Sid. Of his name right now. Sid, that's his name.
Sid. Like from Skins, Mr. Unmetal. No, Sid wasn't Unmetal. Sid was the Sid was the cute geek from series one of Skins, right?
Yes.
Yes.
But Sid learns that one of Serena's training buddies was somebody that got drugs off of, you know, somebody who we learned is Ethan, obviously, which is stupid. She's like, I can't get in touch or get in touch with my contact right now. Get something for me or I'm going to tell them that you were a part of a drug thing. I'm like, it seems like blackmail seems to be a big thing in these past few months, huh? But he goes, you know, like a good Samaritan does and says, here's some hotline numbers to get yourself off of this stuff. And high and mighty cop dude from the family walks up and asks her what's going on. And she tells him that he's a drug dealer. And he goes and tells everybody in one big false swoop, oh, Sid's a drug dealer. And Sid's just sitting there practically shaking in fear and sadness because he... The fact that they didn't know about this baffles me, though. But, I mean, like, I know they're a new family or anything, but the story had to have gotten around somewhere, you know. But it's just like, yeah, I don't want you anywhere near my daughter anymore. And then I'm just like, I'm just like, you guys are overreacting over something that, you know, I understand y'all are, you know, anti-drug and everything, but he didn't do it. And then Serena, being, you know, smart and, you know, drinking water while exercising, grabs the wrong bottle and drinks her drug water and freaks out and, you know, has the overdose reaction. And because they thought Sid sold her the drugs, but it turns out that wasn't the case. Then it was all squared away, and everyone was like, okay, it's fine. Dad's like, yeah, no, stay the hell away. I'm just like, dude. That storyline just bugged me. I'm like, you just had to bring the drug deals or the drug dealers back. You had to ruin Sid's life some more. Thanks a lot, you guys. Love it.
The way I watched the tail end of an episode, which is the one where Sid ended up meeting the girl from back in the day, so I didn't know the story about what happened afterward. But I do appreciate that backstory. I will say one, like, kind of what the hell I had with regard to it. Like, I'm just not feeling this whole Lizzie, Serena weirdness over Sid thing. Like, mm-hmm. Serena tells Lizzie that she still has some feelings for Sid, which I felt like Lizzie should have already known at this point. Then she acts like Serena's the worst sister in the world, and then, like, she's gotta break up with him because she can't date a guy that liked her sister, but then she's convinced that the like is not strong, so she should go for it. It just feels like this whole story is a waste of time. If the show is going to put Sid and Serena together, put them together, like, I don't need this dragged out where Lizzie is just going to continue to get hurt because Sid really wants to be with the sister and the sister really wants to be with them. So just let's fast forward to that part. And can we get Lizzie a man that's actually going to be about her? Because it just felt like really childish and juvenile and like just a conflict between those two that felt like immature girl stuff when those two are like grown-ass women. So I was like, stop this. I wasn't feeling it, you know? What did you think about that whole Serena confessing and then Lizzie acting weird about it?
I'm not gonna lie, I laughed. Yeah. I kind of didn't care. I love Lizzie. I think Lizzie is a cute person. I like, you know, that we learned a little bit more about her background. apparently she, I think it was her dad who had a drug overdose and he died or something, or she saw it or something along that line, which was why, which is, you know, one of the many reasons, you know, being that, you know, one person's a cop, one person's an athlete, you know, it's just like the list of drug or non-drug, you know, related things go on. But, you know, it's just like, yeah, when, you know, she said that, I was just like, dude, we've known this forever. And then she's like, oh, I think it was my alter ego that, I was just like, no, there's no alter ego like Sid. You either like Sid or you don't, or you have a multiple personality that you don't know about, which you evidently do. Because you talk about her as, like, she's there. So it's just like, nope, Serena can go away. She can go find a man that's worth her time. Mm-hmm. Lizzie can go and find a man that's worth her time. And they can just, you know, figure out what he needs in his life. I'm glad he finally got a girl that, you know, wants to be with him, even though it's kind of in a weird circumstance. But I think he needs to work out his priorities a little bit. You know, all three of them do. They need to sort out what they need to sort out and, you know, get it worked out quick. So.
Yeah. Agreed. Did you have any other what the hells, darling?
I am kind of over. I can't remember Steve's daughter's name.
Leah.
That's it. But I love Leah. I think she's great. I think her character is developing really well and everything. But I hate, and I understand they're strapped for money and everything. But you should, Steve should, you know, stop stealing stuff that could essentially get them killed. They all should stop stealing that essentially can get them killed.
Hey, come on, baby. I mean, listen, this is in my scenes of the week, and
oh, I'm talking about the before the 20th through 27th stuff when Steve went and stole the watch.
Yeah,
I or the bracelet.
You. Yes, I'm with you. Like, it's both in my scenes of the week and what the hells. It's in the scene of the week as Steve's man plane, and it's in my what. I'm sorry, it's in my what the hells as Steve's man pain, and it's in my scene of the week as stealing STEALING 300 pounds. Listen, Steve knew doggone well the people that he was stealing from could kill his entire family. Yep. Sienna tells him she's got this stash from Ethan. She's counted it. It's a lot of money, but she's concerned it's going to be a problem. Does Steve care about his new best friend? Does Steve care about his children? Does he care about his niece that he lives with, his sister that he lives with? No. He chooses to steal this dirty money for 300 pounds.
Yep.
If you are going to jeopardize your entire family's life, you better be stealing multi-million dollars, be in somebody's witness protection, or be able to go off the grid where no one can ever find you and live a life in secrecy, lived up for the rest of your time. How are you going to jeopardize your family's life, your friend's life, over 300 measly dollars, over some stuff you could make from a hard week of work? Like, what are you doing? That is the most ridiculous. And the fact that Steve just initially refused to see this. I mean, Hollyoaks had Sienna say that these people could kill your family. But Steve's up here robbing jewelry, and all he had was a $300 deficit. So I'm like, what are you doing? It was
ridiculous. He's buying really expensive shoes for his sister.
And gifts. He steals this money and then doesn't like hide it or anything. He acts like it's Christmas in damn April or May, whichever month we watch that foolishness. And he just has all these gifts all over the... Like, dude, when there's a bullet in your daughter's head, that little cute-ass gift is not going to mean anything to her. She's going to be dead. What are you doing? So, yeah, it was just... It drove me crazy. I couldn't...
Yeah, because it was just like I was sitting there watching, and he was just like... And like I said, he was spending all the money. But Leah's walking around wearing her dad's socks as maxi pads because she doesn't have them.
I can't.
Let's just remember that part, everybody. She has to use her dad's socks as pads because Steve forgot to buy her stuff for her period.
And then
there are like 87 women living in that house. Don't get me wrong. She could have asked if she could borrow, but maybe she's not comfortable with the whole tampon thing.
Hello.
You know, that's fine. But you should still have, you shouldn't be walking around having the Emma problem from Degrassi when she had her first period and she's wearing white and she bleeds out. You know, that's not okay. And DeMarcus being the rock out man that he actually, I'll do that one later. Because
yes.
I think
listen, I was just about to say, and then Leah had the nerves to get mad at that cute brother for getting that stuff for her at first. I was like, girl, stop. You know, but you pointed out something I didn't even think about. How many women live in that house? She could have easily.
You have Leela. You have Terry. You have who's her face?
What's her name's girlfriend?
Yeah, Juliet. You have Leela herself. Yeah, I mean, like there's four or five women living there, and there's Steve and Lucas. And Lucas is a little punk ass too, but it's just like you're just sitting there, and I'm like, you couldn't ask your family a pad. You have a literal plethora of women living in your house. I'm sure they wouldn't care if you borrowed a couple maxi pads to get through the work day. I understand that, you know, she may feel like she may be too prideful to ask. That's probably what it is, because, you know, who wants to ask for something that weird? Because I know when I was little, I didn't want to ask for stuff like that. I'm not afraid to say it. I was probably the earliest bloomer in the world. I was 10 when I first started mine. But, you know, it's just like, I never asked. My mom just threw pads in my face and said, here, use them. You're good. And that was that. But she still always had them on hand, regardless. So it's just like, I don't understand why there wouldn't be pads in the house when there's four or five women living there.
Yeah, that makes no sense. No sense whatsoever. Yes.
And I'm sorry for that rant. I'm sure nobody wanted to hear about it.
Please, girl. But... Look, men need to be educated and the girls are feeling you. No, you're good.
But yeah, it's just like, I didn't get that. I'm like, why are you stealing socks when there are literally, that kind of iffed me a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, here, or why didn't you say anything? Or, you know, that's something that kind of gives itself away eventually.
Yeah. 100%, baby girl. Do you have any others, or was that the last of your what the hells, darling?
I have quite a few, but I think I'm going to give you you told me you had quite a few too, so yes. They might match up.
So, I will save the most infuriating for last. So,
does it have to do with John Paul?
You already know. You already know. So let's actually start with that sometimes prince of mine. let's start with John Paul's sister, Mercy. Oh my God, I am so sick to death of blind Mercy. Yep. Mercedes is making the same mistake Hollyoaks had Sienna made when her little evil child was running out here doing this, that, and the other. She is being totally blind when it comes to the actions of her child. In the same way Sienna was being totally blind when it came to the ridiculousness of Nico. And it's frustrating as all get out. I'm actually not mad at her ultimately deciding to give the child to Wendy, which is a boss move. Like, I think that whole thing where there was the confusion about him, who is Mercy's brat? What's that boy's name?
Bobby.
Bobby. Oh God, the same name as the killer on EastEnders. What is happening? So there was confusion over Bobby. Jesus, I'm messing up with this child's name.
Jesus, Mary, Margaret, child.
Basically, Bobby got caught Skyping, chess playing with G, who is Grandpa Silas. But Bobby spins a lie and says, it is, the G is for Gwendolyn, as in Aunt Lindsay / Wendy, right?
Wendy.
And so Mercy's like, oh, he misses that connection. You know what? We gonna invite that queen to live here. And I'ma tell Bobby, Bobby, you know what? Y'all been connecting so much. We're gonna invite her here to live with you so you can have that support at home. And then Bobby's like a deer in headlights because he know doggone well he been messaging Silas this whole time, right? So I kind of like how she came on the scene, was clearly like the most responsible adult in the room, supported the well-being of that child. And I like the twist about the reason she was doing it is because she's basically working with Silas to get Bobby back for them, right?
Yep.
But I don't like Mercy being so stupid that she falls into the trap every time. Teresa is saying, your child hurt my daughter. Teresa is saying, your child was trying to hurt me, you know. She knows that her child is acting out. But every time anybody in that village comes to her and says, my child is acting out, her immediate thing is, oh my God, you don't know what you're talking about. My child is an angel. My child could do nothing. That girl could have every single person in that village come and tell her her child is a demon. And they saw the child morph into a panther and go terrorize Salem, right?
Yeah.
And she'd be like, I didn't give birth to a panther. Devils aren't real. She could watch that child turn into Dark John Devil, Marlena Devil, Johnny Devil.
Johnny Devil.
You know what I'm saying? She could watch this child. She could watch Bobby Devil manifest in front of her. And she'll look at Satan and be like, you're my Bobby. You're my sweet Bobby. Nobody's going to tell me the difference. Like, it's ridiculous. And even her acting out when it comes to social services. Like, she acted a hot mess when social services was there. On the first occasion, she was just acting a fool when social services was there. And then she went on a rant with the social service guy and told her, like, she felt like a failure as a mother. And she felt like she was messing up everything. And the guy from social services was actually sweet to her and gave her a shot. And I think that was nice and great. And so she could have changed her personality after then and started accepting that Bobby sometimes causes a problem. Instead, she went back to Bobby can do no wrong mode. And then when Olivia, in another one of my scenes, but in another one of my what the hells, calls social services on Mercy because Bobby has locked Mercy downstairs in this dungeon that has morphed into like a bachelor pad for people.
A bachelor bar, yeah.
Right. So Bobby has, you know, locked Mercy down there and is setting up traps to kill Teresa and stuff. And They get it in their heads that Bobby has, that Mercy has just absconded with Bobby, which she shouldn't do. And so, you know, the word is, you know, okay, well, let's just find her on our own. Let's not get police involved. Let's not get social services involved. But then Olivia goes and calls social services like the little brat that she is. So I was annoyed by that. But then, because of that, social services comes over, checks to see what's going on with Bobby. And instead of Mercy staying there and being responsible and just talking about what's been going on with Bobby, she gets drunk and just leaves. Like, the social services is at her house, and she decides that the wise move is to leave so social worker could think, oh, this
buy
woman has
drugs,
abandoned.
Get drunk, buy drugs.
Yes. I was like, what are you doing? So yeah, I am over Mercy being stupid for that child. You know, maybe Mercy needs to take a belt to that behind. I don't know what else she needs to do, but she needs to do something to knock some sense into this little brat before he kills the whole doggone town. And I just need her to stop being dumb, because Mercy is wiser than this. Teresa, who I do appreciate the show, like, making Teresa much more smart. They have played that young lady as a dumb bimbo for a long time. I appreciate her showing that she's got some sense. But honestly, when Teresa is the smartest woman in the room, that's a problem, Mercedes. So I need her to turn her brain game up, because she has been ridiculous, you know?
I mean, even in a more recent episode when, you know, cop lady, cop comes up and says, hey, you're in violation of your parole, or not parole, but restraining order against Wendy. That you learn that Wendy didn't have a restraining order on both her and Bobby, just on her. And, you know, it's just like, okay. And then you have Goldie, of all people,
hello,
being the one to have a conversation with Wendy about, you know, hey, can, you know, maybe we can work something out, and he can chew. Or that was more of the James side of things, but, you know, she had her say too. And like you said, when the smartest McQueen in the room,
come on,
is literally two of the dumbest characters
on
this show, which isn't entirely true, because
right,
Teresa has had, you know, many smart moments,
yes,
for, you know, being as dim-witted as she is about 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That shining 1% we've seen in these past, you know, since, you know, the fire, it's just like, okay.
Which has been fantastic.
Yeah. 100%. I agree.
But I need Mercy
but
on that,
yeah,
page, too. She needs to, mm-hmm, you know, exercise the fact that she has brain cells and use them before her child destroys the whole town. And she's standing around like, Bobby didn't do it. Meanwhile, the whole town is on fire, and he's standing there holding a lighter and laughing. Like, what are you doing, girl?
Just watching the lighter go back and forth and
come
just
on,
watching it.
I mean, I'm going to need then Scott to become the adoptive father of Bobby after he has gone to Damien camp. Like, I need somebody to pray the insane away, okay?
She demonized him.
Yes, I
no
need
more,
him.
No more Jack Torrance, Bobby.
We need to send him to Salem to have the 13th exorcism. That's what needs to happen. Oh my goodness! All right, so that is Mercy. Okay, let's talk about Cindy. Cindy, in the face of Mesba, an actual medical doctor, who is not going to steer her in the wrong direction, because, you know, she is a trained professional who has dedicated her life to healing people who are sick. Mesba tells Cindy not to get snowed over by some fake clinical trial that is touting having the cure to Luke's ailment, but, you know, all we need is $30,000 and a down payment of X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Mattel, Cindy, do not buy the hype. Do not spend money on this. And what does Cindy do? Cindy, who has started like the equivalent of a GoFundMe to help Luke jacks that money to put a down payment on a whack-ass cure that is not even legitimate. Like, what? What in the world? Are we at a point
it's
where
like, it's like, truth be told, I blame Zara for that. I don't blame Cindy for that 100%. Zara's the one who told her about it. If it wasn't for Zara saying, oh, we went to the hotel to talk to somebody about this trial, she wouldn't have done it.
But Cindy spent the money. She made the decision to spend the money. After a brown woman told her, do not do this, Cindy went, oh, do not believe people of color and just do the dumb thing. So she's looking stupid. Like, what are you doing? And is this going to do anything to improve Luke's life? No. Is she going to be looking stupid? Yes.
Yes.
Why? Why do we need the women of Emmerdale? Why do we need the women of Hollyoaks looking stupid? It's not a good look. Cindy's not this dumb. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I couldn't with it. Yes. What did you think of that story, baby girl?
I still think it's Zara's fault. I'm sorry. Ever since, with her 3 seconds of Lisa-ness that was there, I loved her, but her coming in with her boyfriend and trying to get Zara arrested and garbage because of payback for what they did in Thailand or whatever, that was stupid. But it's just like, okay, so you take this man who is dying to give him hope to get a trial for something that isn't even approved by your government. Hmm. And then you come back, you tell Cindy about it, and Cindy, who, you know, just got over the fact that, you know, Sinead from, you know, Coronation Street kept telling her all this crap, too. And then she automatically goes and spends the money on it as if, you know, who's her face there, you know, Sinead Light there, conspiracy theorist queen 101 was there. Oh, what will Steven? He'll be fine. No. No, he will not be fine. He is going to be dead soon. And it's not going to help. It's not going to do any good. You're just hoping for the best, and I think he's going to die in Spain. So there we go. That's my thought. I don't like it. I don't like how she went from, you know, being nothing can save him, nothing's there that can save him, to conspiracy theorist 101 and going and spending thousands on something that isn't going to work. So, yeah, I don't care. She's going to realize she did something stupid, and, you know, it's on her. I have nothing to say.
Alrighty then. All right, so I think we are on my, yes, we are on my what the hells, because I'm on my second to last before getting all up into James. Okay. But before getting into John Paul, I mean.
Right. I mean, James is a pretty good one, too. Well, it was pretty high up in there. I just wanted to hear you.
That is where we're going. So before we get to his new best friend, let's talk about James and his crypto investment strategies. Lord Jesus. So James sees the what is going on in the crypto world. He has a ton of money invested, and he's seeing tens of thousands of pounds reduced to almost nothing in about 30 seconds. Does James turn on his lawyer brain and say, okay, maybe I should not be spending any more money in crypto because this is a volatile market? Does he do anything wise to ensure that he keeps money and doesn't lose money like a fool? No. he steals the inheritance Marnie left for her grandbabies, invests in crypto, and immediately watches it takes the same doggone nosedive that the money that he previously had. I was just like, what in the heck? Like, well, how many days passed before this change happened? Like, it wasn't a couple weeks. Like, it wasn't...
It was literally 30 seconds.
I mean, this wasn't a time when crypto was supposedly on the upswing. Like, I think I told you the week that I actually watched the story, we got the real life story about how crypto has lost like $1 trillion or $1 billion, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, how in the world could James just straight up invest, I think it was like either 30,000 or 50,000 pounds, and just immediately watch it dwindle to nothing again? Like, he didn't just see that happen the day before. I was like, what the heck? Like, I don't know. Hollyoaks, what the hells this week are like, making people who should know better stupid. And that was the ultimate stupidity when it came to James. I was like, what is happening? And then in addition, he got a little flush with cash for a hot minute. So he decides to go and have a date with his sex worker buddy, who also messes with JP. We'll get back to him in a minute. But he goes on a date with Louis. They go to this fancy establishment where James is just flashing the cash and being an idiot. And Louis is being sane, telling him, hey, bro, you might want to watch flashing all this cash around these people. That's probably not safe. James turns the drama queen up to 1,000 and is like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, you little hooker, you. You don't know anything. Take your hooker ass that I paid for your hooker time and get your hooker ass out of my hooker face. My hooker looking face. Okay. So dude takes off. And then what happens? James get roofied by some white collar thugs and they steal his money because he's an idiot. Like, what is, why? Why? So unnecessary. I was not feeling it. Yes. How were you feeling about James's trip down Stupidville Lane?
Again, this was another story where I was just like, this is a guy who should be putting his money away, putting it in the bank, not the crypto.
Come on.
And, you know, and it's like, and you're just sitting there and you're like watching. And I'm like, I kind of like the flip a coin James better.
Agreed.
That gambling is fine because you're like, you can do this and I can give you this. Or, yeah, if it lands on tails, I'll give you this, but you have to pay me back this much plus this, you know. Yeah. Now he's just losing his money to lose his money. He has, not only is it a gambling addiction, it's a flat out waste money on stuff you don't need to waste money on addiction. Because, I mean, like, crypto is like the ultimate gamble, especially right now. And you're just sitting there and it's like, oh, crypto's taking a massive nosedive. And he runs to his computer and he sees 50 grand go down to 15. $15, not 15 grand. $15. And it's just like, see, that's what you get. And I have no sympathy for him whatsoever.
Yep.
The addiction buddies should stay in their little getaway cave for the rest of their lives and, you know, drink and gamble themselves to death. That's what I think at this point. Maybe they can get their heads out of their fat bags, you know.
You know,
but
I will say it is a sweet twist that the foolishness we're about to talk about with regards to John Paul ended with John Paul stumbling his behind through the village. James is
and James
himself.
Is just like, here, let's
up, drink.
I need a partner in crime. Let's drink.
I mean, let's be mutually destructive bros together. I'm kind of feeling what's going to come next. So these two are going to be a hot mess. And
yep.
I can't wait to see how that plays out. That's interesting to me. But Jesus, all the stupidity before then, I couldn't.
I'm kind of curious where that's going to go, though.
Agreed.
Because that is going to, that's going to blow up in somebody's face.
Agreed.
And it's probably going to be both of their families more yeah. so than them. So
we will see, baby. And I guess before we get off of James, let's give some respect to Hollyoaks for explaining why a lawyer that is rational would have sex with a sex worker out of nowhere, right? Because it was, you know, one of the reveals that we're going to talk about is John Paul and the reveal that he had sex with a sex worker that he thought was he was just dating. And James ultimately said something to the effect of, when you're in pain, sometimes the only way to get through it and distract yourself is with pleasure. So, fine mm-hmm. for that explanation, but I was mad. I was like, come on now. James knows better than this. He ain't going to let all his crypto money go away. He ain't going to be out here sleeping with sex workers. Come on now. But love for that explanation. All right.
But I'm like, at least he gave one. That's what I get. It's like, if he didn't give one, then I would have been more mad. But
yes.
I was just like, when he goes to the casino and he talks to Steve and he says, I went to the casino because I didn't want to feel anything.
Yes.
That was beautiful, man.
Yes. I will say, this whole Steve James thing, there is some maturity that's coming out of Steve in this relationship. Now, of course, totally undermined by him stealing his man's credit card to pay bills, but I'm seeing some maturity. Steve has been less annoying in these past few years than he has ever been. I'm here for this trajectory for that.
Yeah. It's like since he came back from his hiatus after, you know, he did his storyline with the Sumners,
mm-hmm.
he's gotten better. He's gotten worth watching again.
Agree.
So.
Yes. All right. Well, let's talk about the focus of the moment and his very racist decision making. Let's talk about John Paul McQueen, who, when we returned to the Hollyoaks podcast, I said to you at a throwaway line in the middle of the episode, baby girl, did you notice how all of a sudden Hollyoaks seemed to be having John Paul drink a lot? Where did that come from, right? Little did I know that a few short months later, I'd be sitting here talking to you about how John Paul McQueen has become so addicted to alcohol, he is bringing alcohol to school and drinking alcohol at school, and in his infinite wisdom has decided to let his blackly black man cousin, Prince, take the fall for his shady behavior.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he is the one that has the alcohol problem. He knows that the one who is responsible for Leah and Marcus getting drunk at school, right?
Mm-hmm.
And him going to the hospital, having alcohol poisoning and all that, is him. But true to form, the same way John Paul kept mom after he was sexually assaulted by a student on school grounds, which left that rapist free to assault other students, which he did. John Paul McQueen is again making a ridiculously stupid decision that has infected the lives of children, that is now affecting the life of his family, because John Paul's mother has decided that the one to blame is not sweet, precious, innocent John Paul. It is blackity black man Prince, who has never had these types of problems, because, you know, the black janitor gotta be the drunk with no evidence because he's black. What? And John Paul was cool with this.
I want to know when it was found out that he did this before, because he said that she said you're going to have to find another job, that there was alcohol found on the grounds before and it's not tolerated. I'm like, So automatically go to the one person that, you know, I feel you there.
This is now the second time John Paul has been in a situation where, as a teacher, he has made a decision so horrible that it has left children in harm's way. If John Paul was being a responsible, ethical teacher, he would have walked away from the school. Well, I don't think he should have done this. I think in his early story, when John Paul was sexually assaulted by Finn, had he immediately reported his rape, reported that the student, because the big thing was him not reporting that a student did this to him. Had he reported that student to ensure that child could get taken out of school and been in custody and not been left, you know, free to go sexually assault other teachers slash students, which he went on to do, I would not have had a problem with John Paul. But this is not what he chose to do. What he chose to do was to keep quiet, which led to Finn trying to rape Nancy, attacking other students. Ridiculous. Here in this situation, John Paul has chosen to allow Prince to take the fall for his actions when he knows he is in the wrong. And what does that lead to? John Paul returning to work, suffering alcohol withdrawal because of Olivia's ridiculous manipulations, because she just had to be at this school trip and push Nancy out of the trip so that, you know, the only person who could drive would be an alcoholic who's trying to recover and dealing with tremors and stuff. John Paul is in the bus with all these students, driving them on vacation, and because of the withdrawal he's going through with alcohol, he jerks, and next thing you know, we're getting a flippity-flippity-flippity, and the van has turned over. There's a child in the van that is Jacob on Emmerdale's sister. Sister in air quotes, because we know Layla is his mom, but the beautiful Natalie Alicia Lexi Anderson is her mother on Hollyoaks, which is great. But she is in the truck, and she now is disabled and unable to walk because of John Paul's actions. And yet and still, John Paul McQueen, knowing all the ridiculousness that he did, when the truth comes out about what he did, he has the nerve to be shocked that he was fired.
Yeah.
This is your second time, brother. The school kept you on after you kept mum about a student rapist being on campus. You kept your job for 10 years after that.
Yep.
Now you have disabled a child, allowed a black man to cover for your ridiculousness, lied on your family, lied to your family, lied to protect your butt, and you think there's going to be no consequences? And you think you're just supposed to be let to continue to teach students and continue to make bad decisions? No. So I am done. I am done with John Paul and his ridiculousness. Hell, John Paul had me siding with Olivia and I was so mad. I did not know Olivia overheard John Paul telling the truth to Prince. Yes, she did. So what did Olivia do? Olivia started blackmailing the fool. She started sending,
oh, yeah,
I know what you did last summer list to John Paul, which I love. Like that, and I'm mad at him for making me love Olivia for doing that, because she's justified. She was in that accident. She could have been killed. Them kids could have been harmed. He needed to be told, right?
Yep.
And I'm mad with him for putting me in a position where I have to side with Olivia over him. He has been doing too much. He does not need to be a teacher right now. He needs to get his alcoholism under control, because he has gotten pass after pass. And what has that led to? People being harmed over and over again, and him seeming to have an inability to take full responsibility for his actions. And I'm over it. I'm over it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts regarding John Paul and his foolishness?
What really got me away from it was his reasoning. My thing with Stee and James there, that was perfect. That was well done. That was like a very cute moment where he's explaining exactly what he's feeling in a, you know, kind of sort of rational way, but not really rational, but it was exactly what needed to be said. He was grieving. He needed to feel something. John Paul's just like, dude, I've been doing this since George died and even beforehand. You know, I never stopped.
I mean, I'm just like, who cares? Who cares? Like, honestly, why would John Paul's rape have not turned him into an alcoholic, but him being abused by some...
But him being punched in the face a couple times.
I mean, come on now. What? What? I can't. I can't.
Yeah, and it's like he has two kids to take care of, and he's not paying any attention to them.
And that little kid
I want to know where his food
is. That little kid playing his son is great.
Yes, I like the little Matthew kid. The little Matthew kid is adorable. I find him great. And it's just like, and actually all the little kids on that show are really good. Little kid who plays Kathleen Angel's cute. Little kid who plays Matthew's cute. Even hell. Even sinister little Bobby's cute. It's just like, you're just sitting there and you're just watching how he's treating his family. And it's like, at the rate he's going, social services is going to get his kids taken away too.
Hello.
Because it's just like, he's been drinking up a storm. He's been, and it took him 2.5 months. 2 months. To tell, because, you know, Olivia and her infinite wisdom decided to, you know, play the microphone game. And, really classy, though. And it's just like, but it's just like, you got Lexi there, Freya's mom, listening in, and you got everything going to crap. And it's just like, okay. And Jambo's like, what is he talking about? And then he has to go explain to her exactly what she did. And I wouldn't care if you arrested me, blah, 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 cry, cry, cry. I'm just like, oh, my God. It's your own fault, dude. Don't be making this all about yourself. You went and got yourself drunk. Prince could have went with you, but you went and got him in trouble. You got Olivia who can't drive. You got, and it's just like they found ways to make him out as the worst person humanly possible. And when one of your favorite characters on the show for almost a decade and a half turns into the character that you pretty much hate the most, it kind of, you know, shows what you can do to a character to bring him down to his lowest. So, I mean, like, I'm over John Paul. I want him to pull his head out of his backside or, you know, maybe, you know, have some fun moments with James before it all blows up in his face. But I need him to work out his issues and work out his issues best because his family ain't dealing with him right now either. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, get your head out of your backside and do what you need to do to get better. That's all I can say.
100%. Okay. And as we transition to scenes of the week, I will just wrap up this what the hell scene of the week for John Paul. So we're going to come back to Louis. So the what the hell in this situation is John Paul getting together with Louis, which I really liked Louis as a character, and even though he's a sex worker, I kind of hope he stays on the show, because he's an excellent, excellent actor. Him and John Paul had chemistry, him and James had chemistry, and I'm interested in seeing what he adds to the show. But I was so mad that Louis was coming across so cool, and then come to find out he's a shady sex worker that's only after John Paul for his money.
His cash money.
When he, John Paul, you know, realizes that, you know, he has drunkenly agreed to pay Louis for sex, and he's just kind of like, what? This is ridiculous. Louis busts out with, well, we had an oral contract that this is what you're going to do. Boy, Ain't nobody oral contract that's standing up in anybody's court. The UK is not no area where I don't think prostitution is legal. So you ain't going to court and get no $300 that you didn't agree. No, stop that. It's foolishness. Foolishness. So but what the hell was Louis talking about an oral contract? I'm like, if y'all had oral, that should have been
fulfilled. Like, yeah, that was it. let's talk about some oral contracts, shall we?
I want to hear that about no dollars. You got that body. You got all the oral contracting you need, sir. And I was just bad at that. But I do love John Paul and Louis together. I like Louis's influence. So the scene of the week is just, you know, his introduction to the show. I think it may be short term, but I wish it was longer term because he seems like a great character. And I don't want to lose him because he is a hot mess, but also showed with James, he could have some sense. So I was feeling that. All right, darling, let's go to scene of the week town. What did Hollyoaks do that made you say, yeah, I like this?
The entire International Women's Day episode.
Okay, I'm with you.
I flippin' love that episode. You had all the women in the show having little parties, you know, having their own little thing. Like, the beginning, it showed, like, old-fashioned, like, through the years. You had, like, Cleo as the nurse. You had a little homemaker. You had all the stereotypical womanly things. And you're just sitting there, and you're watching through. And you had, you know, Tony's, like, smile, ladies, and it'll bring in the shush your face. You smile, too. It'll bring in the lady. I'm just like, you know, you got that little bit of funk in there. You got the Simone mention. Mm-hmm. You got
surprised the hell out of me.
I think they were the only people who did an International Women's episode. And like in the end, like the last thing you saw was like a majority of the older women cast and the main cast is like the background of the thing. And I'm like, oh, I remember her. And, you know, and it's just like it was nice.
It was fantastic. And it shows the power of having a show that is led by a woman that understands things. You know, the branding, you know, bitch versus assertive, bossy versus boss. It was fantastic how they laid that out. You know, and they show like Tony being an idiot, you know, just saying ridiculous things to women and him being corrected. And it was just fantastic how it was all put together. And I also clocked like Smart Teresa, and I like the line she said about like, plan dumb, but really having more going on than other people knew, and that was a benefit to her. That kind of co-signed a scene of the week I had with her. I mean, Teresa was wise enough to clock Bobby's need for help after those attacks on Kathleen Angel and herself. Like, I think that was just another evidence of her just being wise, and I love that was incorporated in the show. And I also appreciated how the show did not whitewash villains. Because one area where I was about to get angry at this show. So they had spent all this time chronicling women who were treated disrespectfully. And then they, you know, put a word up to highlight the disrespect.
Yeah, great.
And then, you know, noted how, you know, the appropriate term for how they were actually acting. Mm-hmm. Well, then the show goes to Olivia, who is doing all her little plotting and all her little snide comments about Nancy being pregnant and so tired as a pregnant woman that how dare she, darling, think that she can do anything when it came to school, you know, and is undermining her job and all that. So at one point, the show puts up the words mean girl for Olivia. And then she just continues to be disrespectful to Nancy. And I thought that they were going to say something good about her. But no, they just cross out the girl and put mean. I'm like, okay, good. Thank you.
and they pretty much did the same to Nancy, too.
Yeah.
Because it was just like you were sitting there and you were watching.
I don't think it was the same for Nancy. But the reason I point this out with regards to Olivia is because Olivia is a villain. So I did not need them to flip it and be like, oh no, this villain is actually doing something loyal by talking mess about Nancy not being able to balance motherhood and work. But no, they just said, no, some women are mean. And they kept that realistic bit in there. And I was like, thank you. Because that's 100%. Everybody ain't ain't noble when it comes to this. And I thought that needed to be pointed out. So, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it's like, I really like that, too, when they just go through and they're like, oh, she's a pushover? Yeah, no. But they cross it off and they put something strong in there. I really liked that because 99% of the time it was like, this person is so-and-so. And then they do something like a stronger, more empowering word after it to describe what they're like, with the exception of Olivia.
Yes. And I'll say
So it was just like, I liked the positivity. I liked, you know, everything having to do with the episode. It was a very good episode. It explained a lot of stuff. It got a lot of stuff mentioned. It was just a well-done episode all around. And it's nice to see that even though Lucy Allen did a lot of stuff in the past that we really, really needed, she's really knocking it out of the park now. And I'm really glad she's back doing, you know, she's doing well. And
100%.
And I'm hoping that, you know, it stays that way and it doesn't end up, you know, stupid.
Yeah, I'm here for it, baby. Yeah, it's been a fantastic show. So I cannot complain about that at all. Yes. Did you have any other any other scenes of the week for the show?
My other, I do. Also having to do with Teresa, like we've talked before, Teresa has been watching Bobby pretty closely as well, and she's like, Bobby, you know, Bobby knocked over my kid. She barged in during another, you know, appointment with the social worker. How dare you? Or how dare Bobby push my daughter off the bike, blah, blah, blah. It's like everybody had their moments in that scene. But Teresa's just like, we need to get this kid help. And she finds his drawings. And she's looking through the drawings. And Bobby's just like, put him away and, you know, injured her and everything. And then she's just like, you need... I'm imagining this written in the script with, like, big capital letters, bolded, underlined, italicized. You need to talk to your child about his drawing because they are not normal. And I'm just, like, sitting there thinking, you're right, they're not normal because fire is not fun. And I mean, like, it may be pretty to look at, but it ain't fun. And he just has, like, these really sinister drawings. And I'm just like, that's kind of weird. I have to agree. But it's just like, I love how Teresa is acting in these scenes with Mercedes and Goldie. I mean, like, even Goldie's kind of cool this time. And I don't like Goldie. Goldie has been, you know, a shining light over Olivia. So it's just like, I'd rather watch Goldie for 3 months than watch Olivia for 3 months. So it's just like, I'm loving Teresa and how smart she's being and how cool she's being. And, you know, so I love that. So I love what she's doing, how she's treating Mercedes, how she's pushing her back every time Mercedes is pushing her forward. They're definitely having a fight out, but they're definitely, you know, doing what McQueens normally do, but in a more Teresa's being more rational about it. Mercedes is being an idiot. But yeah, I liked those scenes with her and Bobby and the drawings and the. And just her in general this past, you know, month or so, where you just see her say, dude, she's hurting my kid. it was nice to see her, you know, being true mom to form. I kind of want to see where the rest of her kids are at, though, because she has, like, what, two or three? Where's the other two?
But you know, baby. Until the kids' lives are threatened or they're teenagers, we ain't interested in them babies. The soaps ain't interested in them babies.
That is a fair point. That is a fair point. But yeah, you know. Teresa's been on form this past little bit. So 100%. I'm kind of curious to see, you know, now that, you know, our favorite, unfavorite auntie lady is on the scene, exit stage two and enter stage three. When did Blizzard enter? I have a love-hate relationship toward this lady, like I said at the beginning of the podcast. I love how she just walked in and was like, I'm going to be awesome and wicked cool and living with the family and trying to make Mercedes think she's doing a good job with Bobby, and then go, woof, and say, I'm going to take Bobby to go live with me, and then make him think that he makes his mom miserable, so he has to stay with me. That was the bit that was like the clincher for me. I loved that scene, like that last scene of like that near the end of the April episodes that we watched, where they're sitting there and talking, and she's like, "You got to decide who you're gonna live with." It's like, I love hanging out with you, but I think I'm gonna go live with Aunt Wendy. Mm-hmm. And then in that last little post-credit, I think it was a post-credit scene, or just before the post-credit scene, you see a flashback of how she says, it's okay if you want to go live with your mom, but it's clear that you make her miserable, so why don't you come and stay with me? So she is manipulating this child to come and stay with her. And likely, you know, I'm just like, I don't know whether that is stupid or genius or both, because I really hated that, but I liked that at the same time, because the way she went around it is really sad for a child to go through, but at the same time, it's making good for more good Mercedes story along the way, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I don't know whether I like you or hate you. Because, like I said, I had mixed feelings about her when she first popped on. I knew once she got on Earth, the last episode that I watched before I watched the April episodes was when she got off the phone with Silas at that last, you know, exit or post-credit scene when you realize that they're working together. And I'm just like, this could be fun, or it could blow up in their face, one or the other, and I'm kind of curious to see where it goes, because I like I said, love-hate relationship, but it's more along the lines of how she's going about doing what she's doing, and it's really well done. I gotta go watch the in-between stuff to see what happens, but it's just, or just see how it went down to, well, I know why she's living, or why he's living with Wendy, but I want to know what brought on the restraining order, how she got quote-unquote hurt, you know, all that stuff, because I didn't watch anything between that episode with Silas and the episodes that we watched most recently. So I'm going to go back and watch those episodes and see what happens to bring on the restraining order and everything that, you know, nobody knew about until just then. But I enjoyed what I've seen of her so far. She's definitely a cool character to bring in, and I'm curious to see what's going on with her.
All right, darling, and you said you had a final scene of the week. What's do you
I do. I would like to give a shout-out to Shaq and his stupid ideas, because it brought on one of the funniest scenes I have seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. He goes to this dating club scene thing where he meets, well, We know that they get close later on, evidently, because, you know, she's still on the show. But he meets this woman who's in charge of this dating thing, and she goes on a flippin' tangent about how he is undateable, and it was the most beautiful thing I have ever scene. It's like, you don't talk to people, you stand up, and you're a player, you do this. She gives off this giant list, and they, like, knew each other from a while ago, evidently.
Yes.
But she's just giving off this giant list of stuff about him that is wrong.
I mean, baby girl, I appreciate you being in my mind and in my heart because, of course, one of my three scenes of the week is Shaq's friend, who is named Nadira, keeping it real with him. Please continue because you're saying everything I was planning to say.
And he's staring at her like... He's been kicked over and over again. And he's like, that's not fair. And it's like, oh, dude, it's totally fair. She just clocked you. She just clocked you so hard that you don't even know what hit you. And it'll hit you when you get home. And, you know, it's like I was curious on, you know, what would happen when he went on this whole attempted dating thing. Because I really love Mizpa cute little 20 years older, younger than her.
The imam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and him trying to put her, or, you know, him trying to put him out there and get him to the dating thing in the first place because, you know, he was trying to be nice. And he's like, no, the apple did this thing. I'm like, dude, apps don't help.
And I mean, it wasn't exactly that he was trying to be nice. Shaq was hurt because he is still grieving the loss of Verity. That's what's mm-hmm. going on. And he wants a relationship of substance, but he no longer wants the hurt. So he's actually making a decision that a number of people do, and that is to have an arranged marriage. And actually,
rash decision making that actually could be helpful.
This is one of the best portrayals of a person making this decision that I have seen. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's being totally rational in what it is that he's looking for. But I also appreciated Nadira coming in and talking to her friend in the way that only a friend that really knows you can. Like, only your friend can say to you, homeboy, now you know you're not mature enough for all this. The people that I'm working with are serious. They want somebody that's going to be a serious contender for a husband. You're not that. So stop playing. Listen, if you want your girl Verity, go get her. But, like, I don't need you messing up my business because you've all of a sudden decided that you want to be a married man. You need to be mature enough and have enough prospects in order to be successful in this department. You do not have that there. I'm keeping it real. And I do appreciate, like, Nadira, like, I felt sad for him when she just, like, read him for filth, and I understood, like, that's her business. She wasn't messing around. She couldn't mess around with that boy. But, like, I think she was talking to him like bro to bro, mm-hmm. and didn't understand how much that would hurt him. But it did click for her, and so she went out to him and said, listen, I'm sorry. I know that I said this to you in a rash manner. I was just trying to keep it real because this is very serious for me. But I want you to know that I appreciate you. I respect you. You've been my friend for a long time, right? And
yeah.
he was able to receive that. And I thought that was perfect. And I was like, okay, the chemistry between these two, I am feeling it. And then up walks Verity as they're talking. And what's Brother Man decide to immediately do? Pretend to flirt and act like this is his girl to make Verity jealous. And you know what? I'm here for it, because this actress who plays Nadira is fantastic, mm-hmm. Shaq is fantastic, their connection is good, and I'm just interested in seeing where it goes. So if they are connected, cool. If they have loved interests of their own, because I do like Shaq with Verity, great.
Yeah, I do too.
I need Nadira to stay on the show. She's excellent, and I really like her addition to this cast. I think she's fantastic.
It's like, as long as they don't try pulling the three-way thing again. We've tried that so many times now that it just hurts and it doesn't work.
We can stop that foolishness. I agree. Yes. So me, I have two quick what the hells to close it out. First of all, we do not get enough Mercy and Scott scenes, and we got a little bit of Mercy and Scott, and
yep.
I just was fantastic. Mercy was supporting Scott over, you know, his adoption concerns, and Scott was just being a bro to Mercy. I loved it. I need more of their scenes.
Scott was being Scott.
I love
it. Yep, Scott was being Scott.
And let's go back to talking about Lexi, Natalie, well, Natalie Alicia Lexi Anderson. Natalie Anderson is the actress who plays Lexi Calder on Hollyoaks and played Alicia on Emmerdale. She is Jacob's Emmerdale mother, in air quotes, since we found out the biological mother was Layla, and she is now Freya's mom. That was such a promising twist. I missed most of the story that she came in with, which had to do with police stuff, but my mouth hit the floor when she ended up on that screen. I love this actress, and I didn't even realize, I think she was on Emmerdale from 2010 to 2015, and I think I started watching Emmerdale in 2009, and I didn't even realize she's been going off the screen 5 years. To me, it doesn't feel like that because, you know, Jacob's still on the show, and Layla is still on the show, as is Jacob's father, and so, you know, his, you know, stepfather. So it feels like, and she's mentioned all the time, so it feels like she hasn't been gone as long as she has. But, you know, watching her grill John Paul about exactly what happened and watching her, you know, make sure he feels the weight of the responsibility that he should for the foolishness that he pulled just reminded me of how dynamic this actress is. Even, you know, her pain and knowing her baby was hurt and rushing to that hospital just to see about her and see how she was doing. This woman has lost no beats. And can we talk about the chemistry she has with Prince? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because Prince was at the hospital because his woman was in this car accident, and Lexi was at the hospital because her baby was in the car accident, and you have those two talking with each other, and I'm just seeing sparks on sparks, and I'm like, yes, goodbye, Olivia. Hello, Prince and Lexi. Let's have it happen. Let's have her intertwine with the McQueen family and own the show forever because she is flawless in this role. You know, so Natalie Anderson was a perfect hire. I'm glad this show has found a way to integrate her into the cast. And I even like the little lady who plays Free. I think she's cute. I think that's fantastic. But I need more of her on this show because she's flawless. She has been off our TV screens for too long. And I need her on longer. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, maybe she can call over to Hollyoaks. I mean, call over to Emmerdale and tell Jacob to act like he got some sense every now and then. I'm here for it. We could do a crossover. Shut. Are you liking Miss Anderson in that role, baby?
I actually do. Yeah, because it's like you said, I didn't see much. I don't remember much of her entrance storyline anyway. But it's just like you're just sitting there, and I'm like, where do I recognize her from? My brain is just like, why? And girl, then you said that, and I was like, holy crap, it is.
It took me 2 seconds, because I had just finished watching the Emmerdale episode with Jacob in it, and then I turn on the screen, and this queen is across my screen, and I'm like, Alicia!
Yeah, because it was just like, and I also think the little girl who plays Freya is really good,
yes.
And I hope they kind of keep her on longer, because, you know, it's just like she's a cute little character, and so is the little dude who played her friend that was in the crash. I can't remember what his
was
name
was. Not Mason? I thought she was talking to Mason a lot.
Oh, it could have been.
Yeah, I think that was Mason.
But yeah, because it was like Mason's making a lot of friends, and he got her, and he was out of school for 2 months for, you know, for obvious reasons, and it was just like, we're just going to have to integrate her into school Cooper as slowly as possible, and I'm just like, uh-oh.
But, you know, I thought she was going to die. Like, when she popped up on screen, and she was an extra pretty much, I was like, oh, this girl must gonna die in this accident. And I also thought that Olivia was, because I thought that was going to be her reward for doing all that manipulating to get Nancy to get off the trip. And I will be honest, I did not think that accident stunt was done well at all. Like,
it was a pretty lame stunt. Yeah, it's like, oh, so you're basically just gonna flip the van over once?
Over nothing.
And it's not even a full flip, it was just a tip to the side.
Ridiculous. The build-up was fantastic. The aftermath was fantastic. The actual stunt, man. But
the actual stunt
It was not good. But the fact that we've got this queen back on our screens on a regular basis, like, I'm here for it. And like you said, Hollyoaks under Lucy Allen, I know where there's some concerns. It's been flawless. I love it. I think it's been fantastic. And I'm here for her continuing to guide this show because she's been doing an excellent job. And I can't wait to see what else she brings to the table. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So, with that, I will say that I'm at Brother Soup.
And I'm at Lindsay Amanda.
Thank you all so much for listening. Until next time, keep wearing that mask, get vaxxed, don't let COVID kick that ass. Look here, doctors are out here saying that these COVID numbers that are reported are 5 to 10 times lower than they actually should be. We now have BA4 and BA5, which are going to start to pop up. And I think right now BA2.12 or whatever is like destroying most of our countries. Y'all, if you're in a nation where everybody's like, oh, it's fine to get COVID and then find out 6 months after your mild infection that all of your organs have aged 20 years, don't do that stuff. Keep that mask on, get vaccinated, and do everything you can to protect yourself until our governments get sense and work to protect public health as they should have the whole time. And this ends the Public Health Podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.